Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to welcome back to the show Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist at the U of I. And from time to time, he's here. Particularly, we like to have him in when things are warm and insects are most active to help with insect pest problems around the home. And certainly it can be anything inside, can be something outside that deals with or bothers ornamental plants or things that you might happen to grow to eat, any and all of that. We stop short of field crops, but the kinds of pests that you see in the home and in the home landscape, those are the kinds of things we deal with. And all you have to do is call in here and tell us what the problem is, and Phil will do his best to tell you how to deal with it. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Thanks very much.
Glad to be here.
We were just chatting a little bit before we got going here about the Japanese beetles. It seems that maybe I was going to say it wasn't too bad a year, but maybe, again, it's a matter of where it is you are. And some people might have seen a lot, and some people didn't see all that many.
Yeah, they've been very spotty in their occurrence this year. They did show up early. Typically, we don't see them until the end of June. This year, they showed up in the middle of June. You can probably blame the 90-degree temperatures we had in May on that. But that helped them along and brought them out early. But in generally, in the Champaign-Urbana area, we've seen relatively small numbers. There'll be pockets where there's heavy numbers, but generally throughout East Central Illinois, there's not very many. I have had good reports of high numbers in Bloomington and Peoria areas, as well as many areas in Chicago area, Will County, that sort of area. So it depends on where you are, whether you just got lucky. Most places, people around the Champaign-Urbana area got lucky this year.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I didn't give the telephone number at the head of the show. I better do that if people want to call in with questions. 333-9455, that's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, if you've got questions, you can call us. One of the big problems that a lot of people have been dealing with this summer around Illinois is dryness, and some areas mm-hmm. of the state severely dry. And again, I guess this probably depends on the insect that you're talking about. How has dryness meant for the insect populations in the state?
Dryness typically, and this year is no different, typically increases the number of insect pests that we have in general, because a major mortality factor, a major thing that kills many, many insects are fungal diseases, which are specialized to insects and attack them. And because fungi need damp conditions and preferably cooler conditions, when you have hot, dry weather, those fungi are not near as active. So we see more insects surviving than normally would. And, we normally don't see the ones that didn't survive, died when they were young. So we're seeing more in the way of caterpillars, particularly on trees and shrubs. Grasshoppers are more numerous this year because there's a fungal disease that normally takes those out in damper conditions. And we're also seeing an increase in some West Nile virus cases this year because the mosquito that carries that northern house mosquito prefers very putrid water, which develops in gutters and in tree holes and areas where there's organic matter such as fallen leaves and so on sitting there. And then you get some water there that doesn't get refreshed by rain very often. And so it really gets smelly, dark-colored, stinky, and that's just what this mosquito loves. So most people tend to think, it's dry. We're not going to have any mosquitoes. Well, we don't have the ones that tend to come up and bother you all the time that are buzzing your ears and drive you inside with large numbers. Those are normally floodwater mosquitoes, which are normally associated with high rainfall events. However, the ones that are, and they're not normally disease-carrying to people, but the ones that carry diseases to humans are the little sneaky Culex pipiens, the northern house mosquito, that likes the dry conditions. And when we had the West Nile virus heavy before, it was due to that. We're not seeing any numbers anywhere approaching that sort of situation, but we have had several cases around the state. And a lot of the Illinois Department of Public Health does check mosquito larvae for West Nile virus, and they're finding it, and also in catches of adults. So it's out there. It's more prevalent than it has been. Mosquitoes more prevalent than it has been. it's something you need to be watchful for. Clean out your gutters. Get rid of the old tire that's got water in it. Dump your bird baths and wading pools once a week. This sort of thing. And then wear repellents containing DEET are the best if you're out there, particularly in the evening and early morning, and mosquitoes are around. And try to limit your activity out in those hours.
Yeah, I've met some of these sneaky mosquitoes. I think it's the bigger ones. You could feel it when they bite
right.
you. The little ones, no. Only later you notice that.
The Norman House mosquito is kind of a little brown guy that you just kind of you're doing something. You kind of look down, and there on your leg is this little brown mosquito just sitting there pumping away. He's the one to she's the one to transmit the disease. They're all females if they bite people to get blood for an egg deposition. But they're the sneaky ones. They're the ones that transmit the disease. The ones that buzz your ear and make you know they're there, and when they bite, you feel it. They're usually one of the other tree hole mosquitoes, Triceratops, or one of the floodwater mosquitoes, and not as likely to be carrying diseases in this part of a state.
Okay, we got some callers here. Let's talk first with someone in Belgium, line number 4. Hello.
This may be a question for May, but I want to try it here. Okay. I've noticed this year that the fireflies came out much earlier than usual, just like the June bugs, Japanese beetles, I guess. I don't know if those are the same thing, June bugs and Japanese beetles.
They're in the same family. They're related, but they're not quite the same.
And I noticed the fireflies came out very early, and they didn't last very long. But yet fireflies always seem to like the warm weather. You know, they don't usually start blinking real good until it gets about 90 degrees. And I notice it isn't not quite the same year. Is there something going on here that's a little different?
Well, all insects are cold-blooded animals. They take on the temperature to a great extent of their environment. And as with us and other animals, our enzyme systems are various activities that occur inside our body work better at higher temperatures to a degree. Once you get over the mid-90s or into the hundreds, you start having problems. But generally, they work better under warmer conditions. And with an insect or any other cold-blooded animal, anytime you have extended periods of time in which temperature is warmer than normal, which we did tend to have. We had a spring that tended to break fairly early this year and stayed warm, and then we got that a lot of hot weather in May. We had a series of over 90 degree days, and that's the highs, followed again by June, and this will cause the insects to come out. In general, through late May and through June, we were seeing insects coming out about 10 to 14 days ahead of normal, and fireflies would have been no different on that. And it all has to do with the temperatures. Now, fireflies do better and tend to be around longer when we have periodic rainfalls, or they appear to do that. And they like moist conditions. Their larvae live down next to the soil. And some of the females are wingless and live there too. And so when you have very hot, dry weather, not only does the lack of moisture tend to reduce the length of time that the fireflies are out in apparently, but also we had a lot of hot weather when the fireflies were out, and that just speeds up their life cycle as adults and would shorten their adult time that they're out. So all of the hot weather is the main thing, but dry weather would have entered into it, and that's probably the reason why you saw fireflies for a fairly short period of time, although I live out in the country south of Champaign, and we had them for probably a good 3 or 4 weeks. They were out for quite a long time there, but and we were dry as well. I was kind of surprised they hung around as long as they did, personally, as dry as it was.
Yeah, I just seemed to notice them quick and early. Mm-hmm. But maybe that, like you say, it's a local condition.
It may be, but the warmth would have brought them out early.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Let's talk with someone here next in Champaign, line number 1. Hello.
Yeah, I got a question. Last month, when it got real hot, like almost close to 100 for 2 weeks, I had a whole bunch of ants in my kitchen, and this has really baffled me. I cannot figure it out. After that heat wave about 2 or 3 weeks ago that lasted for a while, all my ants are gone. I got no ants anymore, and I just wondered if you could give me something more that I could understand why, what happened.
insects try to escape the heat just like people do. And normally we tend to think of ants as being more of a problem when you get into the late winter, early spring, when it's really too cold for them to forage outside, but the extra warmth from our heated houses gives them more heat underground in their nests that are close to our foundations and also places to forage inside. So generally we have most of our ant problems in the spring. However, when it gets very hot, insects will easily overheat when they're out foraging outdoors, and they will be attracted to cooler conditions and will come in. And I would suspect that may be associated with your ant situation. I saw a few in my house during that time. Certainly you can see this with flies, as we normally get a lot more flies inside the house during 90-degree days than we do on easier days. And if you notice, they will be sitting right outside the doors, and as soon as that cool air, as soon as they feel that cool air coming out of that door, they fly right in. And ants will take advantage of the cooler conditions as well. So I think that's probably why you saw them and why they disappeared when the temperatures abated. With us having temperatures in the 90s this week, you may see a few more coming back in.
Okay, all right. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
All right, thank you. And we'll go on here. Next caller up is in Whiteheath, and that's line number two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I called earlier in the summer about cicada killers, mm-hmm. and I didn't do anything about them because I don't know if you were the one I talked to or someone else said that they wouldn't bite or anything. They just go about their business.
You kind of have to go out of your way to get stung.
Yes. And so, but now I have all these little sand hills in my yard. And there are a whole bunch of them. And they make these little holes. And then they kick all this dirt up. And mm-hmm. so I have these little sand piles all over the, especially where the sun hits.
Mm-hmm.
So am I going to have like tens of thousands of these creatures flying around next year then?
No, you're not really going to necessarily have a lot more than you would this year. The females will nest underground, and they will make something which looks kind of like an anthill, but it has a little bit bigger hole in the center, usually about the size of a pencil. And they will create those to take their prey down that they find and lay eggs on them. But and then the larva feeds on that prey underground. It comes out to next year. Certainly more of them in an area would tend to increase the number locally, but the thing that restricts the number of any predator is the number of prey. And so, they are a native insect. They have native parasites. There's a little tiny wasp that will follow the cicada killer down into her burrow and then lay an egg right next to her egg, which hatches out and eats her larva and then eats the host. You know, all of this happens in nature and all happens here because we have a native insect. All of its natural enemies are here. And so for that reason and also scarcity of prey, they're not going to build up to huge numbers to where, you know, your yard's going to look like a whole mess of little anthills or these little hills associated with the cicada killers. And also the other thing is, of course, the males are very aggressive towards each other and will tend to drive each other off, and the females will tend to go wherever the males are, so they'll kind of space themselves out. You have a few more when you don't try to get rid of them, but on the other hand, they're not going to overwhelm us because we're looking at a native insect which is in touch with its environment and its ecosystem.
Okay, I'll just leave them then.
I don't think you may see as many as you had this year, but I don't think you'll see a lot more.
Okay. Well, if I get a lot more sand heels all over my yard, I'll have
They
to
mow
do
pretty
something.
Easily, so it's not
they
a big deal.
They do what?
When you mow across them, that kind of just takes care of them.
Throws the sand out.
Oh, yeah, but...
Yeah, spreads the sand around.
Well, you see, people pay good money to have their yard core aerified. You're having the bugs do it.
No, I know. I do that, too. I don't need extra help, actually.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks for the call. Our guest here this morning in this part of Focus 580 is Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist at the U of I, and every once in a while is here to try to help out with insect pest problems. And if you have a problem in the home or in the home landscape, you can give us a good description, he will do his best to tell you how to deal with it. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. How much territory does a male cicada killer patrol?
Typically, I don't know for sure what the square footage is, but generally when you're walking across a yard or people that are into golfing know this well on golf courses, they'll actually shut down holes because of this, because people of the intimidation factor. Normally what will happen is you walk into an area and you got this wasp hovering in front of you, if it's checks you out in the front and then zooms to the side and into the back, and they're, you know, an inch and a half long. They're impressive looking. These are the males, and they're checking out to see if you're a female needs to be mated with, or a female cicada killer, or another male cicada killer needs to be driven off. They figure out you're neither one, and then they leave you alone. But as you walk across the turf after about 50, 75, 100 feet, you'll run across another's territory, and the same thing will happen. And these territories are probably going to be various shapes of oval depending on the habitat that's there. So I normally tend to think that every 50 to 100 feet you're going to run into another cicada killer territory if you've got good habitat, and fairways and most golf courses are that way. So, you know, by the time you get to the pin, you may go through five or six of these before you ever get through of a hole. And that has an intimidation factor on golfers, particularly when you're trying to line up a putt or something and you got these things zooming around your head. So they become a hassle that way. But in a home lawn, typically, you're not going to have more than a couple male territories generally.
Yeah. How many eggs on average does one female lay?
I don't know for sure, but if I was going to hazard a guess, it's probably in the range of 10 or so, because she essentially builds a new burrow for each egg she lays. And this is an insect which is going to have a fairly low profundity, a fairly low number of eggs laid, because she does provide so well for them. Other insects will lay, you know, a housefly, which doesn't give any parental care, doesn't provide the food real well and so on, they'll lay a couple 400 eggs. But on this type of an insect, probably 10, maybe 20 is probably in the range. I'm not really certain.
Okay. Well, let's talk with some more folks here. Let's go next to Chicago, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
When you bring a houseplant home from the nursery,
mm-hmm.
some kind of a flying insect all of a sudden. What is that?
They little white guys?
Sort of, yes.
Chances are that with a if they're little white insects that are look like pinhead sized or so, or three or four of them on a pinhead, those are probably white flies. And in most houses, the white flies will tend to disappear unless you've got a host which is just perfect for them. They really love hibiscus, they like poinsettias, this sort of thing. You can get rid of them by spraying for the nymphs, which are on the underneath side of the leaves, and use insecticidal soap for that. A couple sprays a week apart should really knock them down. If your air has a tendency to be kind of on the dry side in your house, chances are good they'll disappear on their own. At least I know when I've tried to keep them alive to use for classes, they all die out on me in university buildings. So I think in fairly dry humidity, low humidity situations, they just the nymphs are unable to sustain themselves. So it's a I have a hard time keeping them going, although I've been able to be successful on houseplants in my own home quite well. But insecticidal soap sprays will knock them out, and they're a common greenhouse pest.
Years ago, they had some kind of a strip that you could hang up, and the fumes or something from that would kill the insect.
Are
they available?
Yeah, these are called Vapona dichlorvos is the common name on the chemical. They're sold as no pest strips, and you'll find those still in hardware stores and so on around. These will be effective against that. Make sure you pay attention to the warnings on them. They're not to be used around shut-ins or in food handling areas, kitchens, etc. But they are a vaporizing insecticide, and that will help as long as you don't overdo it.
I see.
I've known of people who tried to do their own pest control this way by taking one of these and putting a putting a plant in a plastic bag and putting one of these things in it for a couple, 3 days, and they've normally successfully killed their plant by the very high amount of insecticide that occurs in that situation.
How about a mint plant? They say flies and mosquitoes don't like those.
It depends on the mints. More commonly, what they'll recommend is one of the scented geraniums. They're actually called a mosquito plant that you can buy. You'll find that on your back page of your Sunday supplement, this sort of thing. Chances are, what we do know is that there's some effect there, but it's very minimal, and it's only for a small amount. So in other words, you're sitting on your patio, and you had 15 or 20 of these all surrounding you to where you couldn't hardly see, and you had a few sitting on your lap, et cetera. It would probably reduce the problem, but if you have them around the edge of your patio, you won't see much difference.
That's it. All right, then. Thank you.
All right,
you're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Let us go next to a caller here in the Pontiac, line number 3. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. You got into insecticides, and that's where I had a question.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching TV once, and there was a commercial came out and caught my attention. They claimed that you could spray something or other on the ground around your house and in the yard, and boy, they would kill the ants and everything for a long time. And I don't remember all the details. Maybe you can fill me in on this, but my thought was, is this a good thing to do, or are we getting a little crazy with trying to control, you know, and sterilize the ground around your house for yards and yards and yards?
In my personal opinion, we're getting a little crazy, to say the least. What you're doing when you, for the first part, for these insecticides, typically they rely on, there's a lot of pyrethroids and other insecticides that will normally kill insects for about a month, and then other insects will move in. And if you time right, you can get several months out of that. For instance, if you were to apply this material in, say, mid-September, when the insects are going to kind of die off by mid-October anyway, and then not build up much until you get into May, one application that really lasts a month will actually give you control from probably September to May. Now, they're using winter for practically all of that, but, you know, advertising works that way. You won't see the bugs for a while because the snow and ice pretty well keeps them down. But in reality, and certainly when I see these things, they're mainly making claims that they really can't substantiate very well. And it also makes me shudder if they could do this. Insects are important parts of the ecosystem. A lot of our world revolves off of insects and what they do as far as our other animals that we enjoy and plants and so on. And to just try to get rid of them upsets me. There's a pesticide company that brags that, you know, if you follow us, you won't see any insects.
Uh-huh.
And like, that's a good thing. And to me, that'd be terrible. I mean, I went to a conference a couple years ago in Hawaii, and I got very depressed because there weren't hardly any bugs there. I would never live there. I mean, there's just not a lot of butterflies. There's the monarch. That's it. You know, it's just, to me, living in a world without insects, you can have it.
Well, that, you know, that's the camp I'm in, too, and I was recalling when I saw this commercial that I had an old aunt, and she's passed away now 40 mm-hmm. years ago, but she lived up in Elmhurst, and she had a small front yard, but she was so disgusted with the wildlife that were in her one-inch tall grass that she mm-hmm. had that ripped up, and she had astroturf put down.
Yeah, I've talked to people from the Chicago area about that. I started out my career up there, and every once in a while when I got one of those on the phone, and still do, I recommend that they go move to a high-rise apartment so they don't have to hassle with all this stuff. I mean, you know, if you're going to live where there's nature around, you've got to accept that nature, insects are part of nature, and a lot of these people get upset just because there's a bug. They could care less whether it's a harmful thing or not.
Right.
It's a bug. I don't like it. I'm in charge, thus it should die.
Right.
To me, that doesn't fit with my idea of life.
Right. Well, okay. I just wanted to hear somebody else talk about things the way I do. And I was a little upset about that commercial. I couldn't imagine mm-hmm. why anybody would want to kill all the ants there.
Yeah, I have no problem with doing things to keep them from hauling you away. But on the other hand, you know, I even get upset about outdoor ant stakes because they indiscriminately will kill ants.
Yeah.
And ants are an important part of our ecosystem.
They are. I mean, I'll fight over my bed, you know, if there's
sure.
a spider in it, then I'll win that battle. But
yeah.
I don't care about the yacht.
The rest of it's theirs, you know.
Right.
Let them have it.
Okay. Thank you.
All uh-huh. right. Thanks
Bye.
For the call. Our guest in this part of Focus 580, Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist at the U of I, and he's the guy here who occasionally is on the program. And we say, okay, if you got a bug problem and you absolutely have to get rid of it, you can't deal with it, okay, we'll tell you what to do. Otherwise, you know, maybe we'll make some suggestions about how we can just get along.
That's right.
You'll see. But you make up your mind what you want to do here. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next up, we have a caller in Edwardsport, Indiana, line number 2. Hello.
Hi. I have a problem with, I call them ladybugs.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know what their real name is. Somebody said they were imported.
Probably, if they're ones coming into your house, they're probably the multicolored Asian lady beetle.
Okay.
Which are a type of ladybug.
Okay, well, I was wondering, I don't use any kind of pesticides or,
uh-huh.
you know, weed killers or all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I live out on a farm.
Okay.
In an old house.
Uh-huh.
And they invade me from about the first cold snap. Throughout the winter.
Right.
And I was wondering, is there something I can use that's nice to everybody else besides them?
Okay, there are...
Start on them.
There are a variety of things. First, they weren't going to come in very high numbers to your house until we get into the fall, September or so. And they're going to be...
I didn't know if I could get a jump on them.
Getting a jump doesn't help a whole lot unless you're going to... be willing to spend hours caulking. They do go in through cracks and crevices, particularly where edges, such as eave areas, corners of a house, both outside and inside, and also around window framing. And anything you do to caulk some of those areas, particularly with a flexible caulk like a silicone sealer, will help greatly reduce the numbers that get inside your house. They're attracted to sunlit surfaces, which means they're going to be primarily on the south and west sides. That's where you need to concentrate your efforts. Long-term answer, and a lot of people that want something now don't like this answer. Long-term answer is if you plant trees that shade those sides of your house, you will eliminate practically all your lady beetles. It may take 20 years, but, you know, if you're not there that long, somebody will be. So it'll be helpful.
My house is the west side of my house.
Uh-huh.
Has big oak trees.
Okay.
And the east side of my house has no oak trees.
Okay. I would guess that probably with that situation, most are coming in on the south side of your house.
The south and the...
And the east in the morning, yeah.
South and the, yeah.
Where it's sunny. And so that will reduce them. You can kill them on contact with insecticidal soap when they're on the side of your house. That is an insecticide. It will kill pretty much anything it hits. But if all you've got out there are lady beetles, that's primarily what you're going to kill. And you can do that daily if necessary. Inside, they will be attracted to light at night. And if you can go on to the internet and you can find ladybug light traps that you can put inside. They're about quart jar size. And if they're the strongest source of light in your house, you will attract probably hundreds of them per night. And you can use that all winter long to help reduce the numbers as they come out of the inside of the walls. If you want to use an insecticide, there is an effective material called deltamethrin, which is available from commercial pest control companies. And what they'll do is spray your eaves and around your windows and along the edges of your house. And
birds and stuff like that.
Not really to any great extent, only indirectly, in that it will kill pretty much any insect that comes in contact with that, and that may reduce the food for songbirds, for insect-eating birds. But certainly similar materials are used directly on the birds to help get rid of mites in cage bird situations and chickens and so on. So very unlikely to have too much of an effect directly on them. Also, you consider if it's sprayed just on the house, the only things coming to the house, sitting on the house, are pretty much ones you don't want coming into your house anyway. So, you know, you can rationalize it that way if you wish, or you can say, no, I don't want to do that. But the deltamethrin applied once in the fall has shown to be given...
Deltamethrin?
Deltamethrin, D-E-L-T-A. M-E-T-H-R-I-N.
Okay.
And a pest control company may have something else that they like better, and it probably works as well. Okay?
All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Right,
thanks for
the
call.
I'd like to find the person that invented those things.
Well, I don't quite understand why that guy brought him in. That was a USDA scientist, actually. You're actually paying his salary, too. That'll make you feel even worse.
I know. It does. I've heard here, I don't know how true.
But they have gotten rid of the aphids on pecans in the southeast, which they originally brought in to help control.
Oh, so at least they did.
And also, we have a lot of farmers today that are in business today in our state because because this insect does such a good job eating soybean aphids on the crop and greatly increasing the yield of soybeans because of that. And we've had a lot. I would venture to say we've had a considerable fewer going out of business, mortgage collapse, farm auctions as a result of this beetle. So there is a silver lining on that dark cloud, or however you want to put it.
Well, I kind of disagree, but
yeah, well,
that's another conversation.
That's right.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Somebody apparently called in here and kind of had the same question in their mind that I had in mind, thinking about the fact that these beetles are in their native environment, mm-hmm. apparently are attracted to light surfaces. Mm-hmm. And that, so I guess my thought was, well, if you really have a problem and you could do it, would it make a difference if you changed the color that your house was painted to something darker?
It makes some difference, yes. We see that I don't have a lot of knowledge on that as far as these lady beetles, but certainly we've noticed that with box elder bugs, which are also attracted to light surfaces, and elm leaf beetles, which are also attracted to light surfaces. And I've gotten, you know, a little bit of anecdotal feedback that brick houses have fewer of them, which are dark by nature, and also ones that have a darker color to their house. Yes.
All right. So that if it's a huge problem, that might be something you would think about.
People are willing to do almost anything to keep these out and reduce them. And so I've talked to people who would paint their house to help avoid as many of them. Yeah. It won't get rid of them, but it should reduce
the numbers. Mm-hmm. Okay. Phil Nixon's our guest. He's extension entomologist at the U of I. We're talking about insect pests. You can give us a call. We've got a couple of people here ready to go, and we'll do as many as we can. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Farmer City, line one. Hello.
Hi. I was wondering if you could give me some information about what to do about Japanese beetles.
Well, one thing is time is on your side because the Japanese beetles are dying off right now. In most areas, we have maybe 20% of what we had 3 weeks ago. But certainly where they're feeding on plants out in your landscape, realize that the damage they do is not going to likely cause any serious harm to the plants that occurs in the second half of the summer. And so putting up with it on areas where the trees or shrubs are not that obvious is an option. On those where you do want to try to control them, we recommend that when they first come out, usually at the end of June, this year it was the middle of June, to go out and in the evening is the best time to do this. And if you poke at one and hold a jar with some soapy water or alcohol underneath it, it'll drop in and die. And you can collect a quart or so of those at night every other night and greatly reduce your problem throughout the season, because they tend to fly to new hosts every 3 days and go to a host that's already been fed on. If you can keep your plants from being fed on early, that helps. But as you get later in the season, or if you don't want to get involved in that, spraying the trees and shrubs that are being attacked every other week, about every 2 weeks, with either Carbaryl, which is sold as 7, or Cyfluthrin, which is going to be sold as Bayer Advanced Garden multi-insect spray. This will also provide about 2 weeks of control. Normally they're out from the end of June through about the middle of August, and so free applications normally greatly reduce the problem. By the time you get in the middle of August, the numbers are so few, the damage is so small, that it's probably not worth your trouble to spray for them.
Well, I noticed that they seem to be worse where I live, and we live right next to a soybean field. They're in mm-hmm. soybeans as well. And we have a bald cypress tree and a birch tree, and literally the leaves were covered. It was like a black cloud.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I was concerned about these trees, if they're damaging the trees. but evidently they're not, is what you're saying?
Yeah. Actually, an interesting feature about trees is that through the they've done some studies, and a tree will go through the winter with a certain amount of energy to put on new leaves in the spring of the year. And it puts those on, and its level of stored energy greatly drops when that happens. But if those leaves are able to produce food for that tree for several weeks, the tree energy comes back up, and it actually goes higher than it was coming through the winter. So those spring feeding insects that would take those leaves off that tree, such as gypsy moth and spring cankerworm and things of that nature, are a real problem to the health of the tree. But once you get to about July, the leaves actually produce very little food from July 1st through the end of the season for that tree. Produces most of its food, most of its sugars for that tree when the leaves are still soft and young. And so loss of leaves from about July 1st on has little impact on the health of the tree because this energy has already been collected. Now, it does impact them more when you get a lot of damage in July and the tree releases and puts new leaves on, then it will expend energy. And if that occurs too late in the season to where those new leaves don't have enough time to generate more food for the plant, that can be somewhat of a problem. But generally, the amount of damage we get, even from Japanese beetles, which may take out the top half to two-thirds of a tree, normally isn't enough that it causes a lot of releafing. And as a result, the trees enter the winter with a reasonable amount of food stores, enough to put on leaves next spring and do well. So generally, they're not really going to cause a lot of harm. In your situation with soybean fields around, the Japanese beetle larvae, the white grubs, feed on grass roots, and so they're feeding in your yard perhaps, but certainly in waterways and roadsides and so on, and that's where a lot of the Japanese beetles are coming from. If you start thinking about the non-square footage of grass in those areas and that they prefer birch trees, willow trees, crab apples, roses, these sorts of things, you've got the perfect plant for them in their yard, and so from all of this area, they come to you. Whereas in an urban area, every other yard has a birch or a willow or a crabapple or something that they want to feed on, and the amount is much less. Even though they will attack the corn, the new silk on the corn, and also the leaves on the soybeans, they really love those trees more, and that's probably why you're getting hit so hard.
Do they have any natural predators that like these beetles? I mean, what actually kills them? It's just the end of their life cycle?
Pretty much the end of their life cycle kills them off. The beetles themselves are mostly crunchies with very little soft, valuable food material in them, and so birds don't go after them all that much. A few will feed on them, but not to any great extent. They're up off the ground, so insectivorous mammals such as some of our mice and so on don't do much to them either, except when they die and fall to the ground, then they feed on them. But there are some parasitoids that attack the larvae. This is not a native insect, so it builds up to high numbers without those. There have been some importation of those to help reduce the problem in the northeastern part of the United States. Unfortunately, it's dropped in numbers considerably, but then the numbers have gone back up. So we don't have real good answers. Milky spore is a disease that works on the larvae, but it seems to have problems sustaining control as well. So we don't have any real good answers beneficial insects or disease-wise, and unfortunately, we just kind of have to live with it.
Okay. And I have one more quick question. Someone suggested, and I think this was a big mistake, is to try those bags, and I think that was a big mistake in my yard.
Limited research indicates that the insects will be attracted to the Japanese beetle traps from a block or two away. But many of them, when they get into the area, will start feeding on the plants. So you actually can have, the research has shown that you'll have more damage if you have these traps than if you do not.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a whole lot.
All right. Thank you for the call. Next up, we have someone in Charleston on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I apologize if this has already been covered, but I just started listening in the car.
No, that's fine.
I have ants in my kitchen. I have big black ants. I've had little ones before. And somebody told me they were sweet ants. I got sweet ant traps, no problem. These are great big ones, and they just come out in hordes at night, and it just started a few weeks ago.
If they're at least a quarter of an inch long, these are carpenter ants, and they would be coming from a nest that's going to be in damp wood or wood that was damp 2 to 3 years ago, and they may be coming from a tree outside, but if you've got fairly large numbers, usually a dozen or more per day, is pretty indicative of a nest inside the house. If you've lived in your house for at least 3 to 5 years, you probably know where they're coming from because you probably had a roof leak, water drain pipe leak, something of that nature that got the wood damp during the summertime, and these ants got into it. And it takes 2 or 3 years before you really start to see them. If you can think back and think of that situation, you may be able to locate the colony. You may have to open a wall to do so, replace the wood or soak the wood with an aerosol ant and roach spray, and this will kill off the colony. Many times you can, if you put out honey, these ants are very much attracted to it. And once they find food, they'll tend to go more straight back to their nest. And so I've known people who've been successful in doing that and being able to find out where they're coming from. Otherwise, it can be very frustrating because an ant wanders a lot when it's out looking for food. They do tend to be nocturnal. Commercial pest control people have access to some baits that have been effective in the past, but those are not available over the counter.
All right. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's see. Indiana. Someone here in Indiana. Line number 2. Hello.
Hello. My question is along the lines of what you were talking about earlier. You wouldn't want to see the world without insects.
Right.
And I'm certainly there and almost considered majoring in entomology when I started in school. But my question is along the line of this. I'm sure there must be pamphlets or something that say you should not grow XYZ, otherwise you'll have ABC kinds of insects. And that's what I'm interested in, because I'd like to have some insects besides the general ones I see in my backyard, particularly beetles. And I was wondering if you know of any pamphlets or a book that along the line of, you know, planting a butterfly garden type thing.
Certainly, if you go to any major bookstore, there will be several books on butterfly gardening. There's one of them that I like the best has been published by the Xerces Society.
Xerces. I belong to that group.
Okay. It's a very, very good book. There are very others that are quite good. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources has a pamphlet on it for Illinois gardeners for butterfly gardening.
Okay.
I have several plants I've planted in my yard to have a lot of food plants for the larvae primarily. And then I have some plants for the adults' nectar sources as well.
Yeah.
Those are available and are quite good. We've planted kale and fennel before and parsley only to have black swallowtail butterflies as a result because the larvae feed on that, for instance. So there are pamphlets that are free. There are books that are available, and certainly you can do that. And generally, we don't. If somebody else is thinking the opposite direction, we normally don't publish pamphlets or anything that indicate what plants you should not plant to avoid insects. Or diseases, because if you drew that net fine enough, you'd have an asphalt yard. Diversity is our best protection against pest insects. And the old rule of thumb is when somebody asks, he says, I'm moving into a new area and I want to plant trees in my yard. Which are the best ones to plant? The best answer usually is wait for a year or two, look to see what all your neighbors plant, and then plant something different.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, do it something different. Because more of the same thing, which is what people tend to do, they copy, well, they got theirs in, let's put that same thing in. That increases your insect problems over the long run.
Now, is there any, I'm looking for something like that might attract certain kinds of beetles. Do you know of any plant or a tree or a bush that, is one that, God, you don't want to have that bush there because they'll eat the leaves up kind of thing?
Well, in general, a lot of your plants that will put out flowers with fleshy leaves are very attractive to beetles in general.
Fleshy
leaves. Magnolias are the number one. Those plants actually evolved before there were butterflies, bees, wasps, etc. So they evolved with fleshy leaves that are attracted to the beetles to eat the fleshy petals that are attracted to beetles to eat the petals. I always have to chuckle to myself a little bit when I get a call from somebody complaining about the beetles eating the flower petals on their magnolia. And I think, you know, the tree evolved to have that done. You know, you're working against nature here. So certainly, and one of our more commonly planted magnolias that commonly has a lot of beetles feeding on its flowers is tulip tree, the yellow poplar.
Yeah.
And other magnolias that are sold as magnolias, those are dead giveaways. And then for Japanese beetles, it's normally they love primarily crabapples, willows, birches, linden trees.
Okay,
those are the big four.
Okie doke. Thanks a lot.
Uh-huh.
Appreciate it.
I can't imagine planting something deliberately to attract Japanese beetles, but
there's got to be somebody out there that is.
Could be. They're kind of attractive.
Yeah, I mean, they're one of the more, in my opinion, they're one of the prettier insects I've fought for several years of trying to make one into a tie tack.
Yeah.
But I've never gotten around to it.
Okay, let's go to Urbana line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Occasionally or periodically, I have a lot of trouble with ants in my bathroom and my kitchen. Now, these are the little ants.
Mm-hmm.
Have you said what's the best thing for that?
Generally, ants inside the house are best controlled through baiting. And there are two types of baits out there. One is a protein bait, so-called grease ants. And the most effective bait out there is called combat ant bait. Okay. It has a hydromethanone material in it as a toxin. It works quite well. And then for those that are going to go to sweets, probably Terro or Grant's ant bait, T-E-R-R-O or Grant's.
I've used Terro a lot. It seems to me that just attracts.
It's gotten less effective since they've gone to a boric acid bait toxin when they used to have arsenic in it. As you might guess, they had serious concerns about arsenic being left around because that
well,
can,
can
that
I
last
get
forever.
But
Grant's has arsenic in it, so Grant's ant bait would be an option. Most ants that come into the house, sooner or later, they fluctuate between going after protein or sweets. So even just using the combat ant baits, it may take 3 or 4 weeks, but eventually they'll get interested in that bait and it'll probably take care of them.
Now, is that like a little black?
It'll be a little. All of these tend to come in little black, round plastic. Low containers that have a bait already in them with little openings in them for the ants to go in.
I've used both those and Terro.
Okay.
And right now I don't have any, but then they'll come back.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah, particularly in the spring they come in.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Right, thank you. And we'll go to Aurora here for at least one more. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, hi.
I haven't, for the minute I forgot what I have, it's so horrendous. Those insects that eat wood.
Termites?
Termites?
Yeah, termites. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
What can I do? The price to keep them away is so, to kill them is so high. What can I do in between paying this horrendous amount of money every 2 years to try to get keep them away? Can I do anything?
Well, first off, we recommend that people who don't have termites don't necessarily have to spray or pay this just to protect their house.
No, I have them.
You already have them, then you're pretty well stuck. There are a couple options that you can do. One is there's baiting systems, and these will normally cost somewhere around $1,500 to $2,000 to install on your typical house.
Yes,
and there's usually about a $200 fee per year to monitor those traps in addition to that. An alternative to that is a barrier treatment system. And oh, by the way, the most common bait names are going to be Centricon and Xterra.
Centricon?
And Xterra.
Okay.
There's also a barrier treatment option, which is normally going to cost around $1,500, should last for about 10 years. You may want to have them come in and check every once in a while, but you don't have to do it every year in all likelihood. And the two best materials there are called Termador.
Wait, let me write that down. Termador.
And also Premis is the other one, P-R-E-M-I-S-E.
Premis?
Uh-huh, Premis.
And how much is that approximately?
About $1,500.
What?
About $1,500, and it's one application, and it should last for about 10 years.
He said $1,600, and it's something about 2 years, having to have it done in a year and a half or two.
He may be using a different product. The Termidor and the Premise are superior products to some of the others, and you want to shop around. Also make sure you get two or three bids. And just like buying a used car, the cheapest one isn't always the best.
Okay, yes, I know at my age.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
What's your name?
Phil Nixon. I'm with the University of Illinois Extension.
Phil, what's the last name?
Nixon.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right. We are almost out of time. Real quick, you want to talk about white grubs in the turf?
Generally, this is the time of year you need to be watching for them. You can cut down for your, if you have not watered at all, you probably don't have a problem. If you've been watering, irrigating, keeping the grass green, cut through the turf, pull it back. If you have at least 10 to 12 grubs per square foot, they'll be right there in the root zone or down maybe a couple inches if the soil is a little dry. Best thing to apply at this point is triclofan, which is sold as Dylox, D-Y-L-O-X, watered in with at least a half an inch of water. Take out 95% of your grubs.
Okay. And if you have these kind of questions, look in the phone book and find out where the nearest extension person is to you. Sandy Mason, for example, is here every month to answer the kind of questions. And this is what she does. She answers them. And if she can't answer them, she passes them on to Busy Calls Phil. And there are other people like Sandy other places around the state. So it's a resource there. It's a great resource if people have questions about dealing with plant problems, diseases, insect problems, any and all that kind of stuff.
It'll be listed as University of Illinois Extension or underneath your county as University of Illinois Extension in the business pages.
All right. And our guest, Phil Nixon, he's an extension entomologist with U of I. Thank you.
Thank you.